The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Georgene Rice Show podcast. This program was originally broadcast live on 93.9 KPDQ. We hope you enjoy the show.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Monday edition of the Georgene Rice Show. 7 minutes after 4 o'clock is our time. Chris Williams is engineering today's program. James Blend is producing. Today we're going to talk with Suzanne Gallagher. She's Executive Director of Parents' Rights in Education. They're hosting a Soapbox Lecture Series. And tonight and tomorrow night, depending on your location, Mary Rice Hassan, who's the author of the book Good Out Now, is going to be talking about America's cultural crisis in public schools. We'll talk with Suzanne Gallagher not only about the events over the next couple of days, but also the work of Parents' Rights in Education. Also, in the next hour, we had planned on a conversation with Sean McDowell. In fact, that was scheduled to be recorded earlier in the day. He was not able to join us, but we were able to pull up a radio interview with Warren Wiersbe. In all the years I've been here at KPDQ, we were only able to get him once, and that was in January of 2018. We're going to share that conversation with you as Warren Wiersbe has gone home. More about that later in the next hour of the show. First, some of the headlines. The U.S. is sending the USS Abraham Lincoln Carrier Strike Group and a bomber task force to the Middle East in order to send a clear and unmistakable message to the Iranian Empire. Well, that, or rather, regime. That's the word of the National Security Advisor John Bolton, announcing Sunday night. Bolton said the deployment was a response to a number of troubling and escalatory indications and warnings on the part of Tehran, but did not elaborate. Any attack on the United States interests or on those of our allies will be met with unrelenting force, end quote. Bolton said the United States is not seeking war with the Iranian regime, but we are fully prepared to respond to any attack, whether by proxy, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or regular Iranian forces. Now, one of the mitigating causes here is that the United States has withdrawn, as promised, the waiver on some of the countries that are allies of the United States who are looking to Iran for their oil, and they've been given a certain length of time to find other resources. Meanwhile, President Trump is not in favor of Special Counsel Robert Mueller testifying before the House Judiciary Committee on the 15th of May and answering questions about his findings on Russian interference in the 2016 election. Now, just by way of putting this into perspective, Mr. Mueller no longer works for the federal government. The president is expressing his preference, but he has no power to prevent it from happening. Representative David Cicilline, a Democrat out of Rhode Island, said that a tentative date of May 15th has been set for Mueller to appear before the House Judiciary Committee and face questioning over his report. The Rhode Island lawmaker said that while there is no guarantee that Mueller will show up to the hearing, he heard nothing from either Mueller's representatives or the White House to indicate that special counsel would not testify. On Twitter on Sunday, the president questioned why Democrats wanted Mueller to testify and stated again that there was no collusion between his campaign in 2016 and Russia. Bob Mueller should not testify. No redos for the Democrats, he tweeted, saying that the report itself is the answer to their questions. And National Economic Council Director Larry Kudlow denounced Senator Cory Booker on Sunday after the 2020 White House candidate said President Trump was taking credit for a recovery that started under former President Barack Obama. What Mr. Booker and some others are saying is simply not factually true, Kudlow said, and I would agree with him. Kudlow spoke 2 days after the publication of the April jobs report, which showed that the American economy added 263,000 jobs last month, while the unemployment rate fell to 3.6%, the lowest since 1969. Despite the rosy numbers, Booker insisted that the boom's effects were not being felt across all economic levels. Unemployment rates among African-Americans, Hispanics, and other minorities, the lowest in our nation's history, or at least recent history. Meanwhile, President Trump has threatened to hike tariffs on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods to 25% at the end of the week, as trade talks with China appeared to be stalling. He tweeted his frustration over how slowly the negotiations were progressing, writing, "The trade deal with China continues, but too slow as they attempt to renegotiate." No, President Trump. who has called himself a tariff man, vowed to hike import taxes on $200 billion in Chinese products from 10 to 25%. His comments came as Chinese Vice President Liu He is preparing to travel to Washington this week to resume those negotiations with both sides trying to end a trade war that has affected the global economy. My understanding is several Chinese leaders did not board planes. They were expected to board earlier today to the United States for those talks. And President Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, headed to jail today to begin serving a 3-year sentence for campaign finance violations, tax evasions, bank fraud, and lying to Congress. Cohen spent his final weekend of freedom trying to maintain a semblance of normalcy, leaving his Manhattan apartment on Saturday with his son to go to a coffee shop and then to a barber shop. They both got haircuts. Cohen's next step was the pricey store Barney's of New York, where he told journalists that he plans to hold a news conference Monday before heading to prison. He did speak to members of the press, but did not take questions. And Alex Trebek got a standing ovation as he accepted an Emmy Award as host of Jeopardy and immediately set the audience at ease, even as he alluded to his cancer diagnosis. Trebek is 78. He announced in March he has advanced pancreatic cancer. He told the theater audience on Sunday he had been worried that sympathy rather than merit might snare him the trophy for best game show host. But then he mulled what happened last year after he underwent surgery to remove life-threatening blood clots in his brain. You think that you have elicited a certain amount of sympathy, but I didn't win, he said, drawing roars from the crowd that moments before rose to applaud him. And the United States is deploying an aircraft carrier, I think I mentioned that already, to the Middle East in threat to Iran. Hamas fired some 700 rockets into Israel, and from the story, terrorist groups fired dozens of rocket barrages towards southern Israel on Sunday, as well as several longer-range projectiles toward the central part of the nation. According to IDF, terrorist groups in the Strip also tried to carry out a terrorist attack using a rocket-propelled grenade. And thousands gathered in Times Square, part of the Focus on the Family event from Kevin McCullough, who was there. The seminal moment was when Planned Parenthood's former director of the year, Abby Johnson's 4D ultrasound, appeared on the big screen. She is expecting, and that was her live ultrasound. At that very moment, she was on an examination table in a mobile medical unit being behind the stage. I was standing next to, for the first time in all my years of Times Square, at that moment. Well, in the middle of literally the world's busiest intersection, a quiet fell across the multiple blocks that was so deafening you could literally have heard a pin drop. No angry chants and protest, no applause of agreement, just a sleepy little baby face in beautiful 4D staring out across New York City's busiest neighborhood. And you'll recall that New York City passed the most liberal abortion policy in the country. Also, we learned that, I have to tell you what this date points to. Boeing, by the way, is pretty numb that it is disclosed after airlines had been flying its 737 MAX plane for several months that a safety alert in the cockpit was not working as intended, yet it didn't disclose that fact to airlines or federal regulators until after one of the planes crashed. The feature was designed to warn pilots when a key sensor might be providing incorrect information about the pitch of the plane's nose. But within months of the plane's debut in 2017, Boeing said its engineers realized that the sensor's warning light only worked when airlines also bought a separate optional feature. Well, President Trump announced on Sunday that former Obama-era border chief Mark Morgan will lead U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, filling an important role in the Trump administration as it seeks to curb immigration at the southern border and tighten border security. Morgan was has publicly supported Trump's border wall and has been critical of Congress' progress on the issue of immigration and border security. A former FBI agent, Morgan led Border Patrol during the final months of the Obama administration. And a new Gallup poll shows Donald Trump's presidential job approval rating hitting a new high of 46%. That survey was conducted from the 17th of April through the 30th, almost entirely following the public release of the Mueller report. By the way, at this point in the Barack Obama administration, he was 44% in the Gallup polling at that same period. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
21 minutes after 4 o'clock, you're listening to The Georgine Rice Show, brought to you in part today by Liberty Coin and Currency and Zero Res. Hey, on this day back in 2013, kidnapped rape victim Amanda Berry, Gina DeJesus, and Michelle Knight, who went missing separately about a decade earlier while in their teens or early 20s, are rescued from a house just south of downtown Cleveland. Their captor, who hung himself in prison in September of that same year at the beginning of a life sentence plus 1,000 years, will not suffer his penalty here on Earth, but will be held accountable elsewhere. And on this day in 1994, former Arkansas state worker Paula Jones filed suit against President Bill Clinton, alleging he'd harassed her in 1991. Jones would reach a settlement with Clinton in November of 1998. And on this day in 1941, Bob Hope did his first USO show before an audience of servicemen as he broadcast his radio program from March Field in Riverside, California. Well, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, in a letter on Monday, denied House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Richard Neal's request for President Trump's tax return, saying the request lacked a legitimate legislative purpose. As you have recognized, the committee's request is unprecedented and it presents serious constitutional questions, the resolution of which may have lasting consequences for all taxpayers, the letter said. Mnuchin told the Massachusetts Democrats he'd relied on the advice of the Justice Department. He concluded that the department was not authorized to disclose the requested return and return information. The Department of Justice has informed us that it intends to memorialize its advice in a publicized legal opinion as soon as is practicable. Out of respect for the deadline previously set by the committee and consistent with our commitment to prompt response, I am informing you now that the department may not lawfully fulfill the committee's request, the letter said. Well, the move, which was expected, is sure to set in motion a legal battle over the president's tax returns. The likely options available to Democrats would be to subpoena the Internal Revenue Service for the returns or to file. So we are in a season of significant subpoenas. And as I mentioned, Representative David Cicilline said on Sunday that the tentative date of May 15th has been set for the special counsel Robert Mueller to appear before the House Judiciary Committee and face questioning over his report on Russian interference in 2016. He is no longer employed by the federal government. He is not under the jurisdiction of the president, so it will be up to Mueller himself whether or not he intends to come. The date is tentative, and neither the House or the Senate has heard from Mueller as to whether or not he intends to participate. Meanwhile, the battle between congressional Democrats and the Justice Department over Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia report has reached new levels of vitriol. One can't imagine it getting much worse, but as some on the left call the Attorney General Bill Barr to be physically dragged in to testify or even locked up for defying congressional subpoenas. The demands have escalated after the Attorney General refused to appear before the House Judiciary Committee last week over a disagreement of protocol over the format of the hearing. Though he testified a day earlier on the Senate side, Democrats on the committee still want to bring the DOJ leader to answer their questions on the conclusion of the Mueller investigation. The committee chairman, Gerald Nadler, also imposed a Monday morning deadline for Barr to turn over a full redacted, rather unredacted, Mueller report and additional files, a deadline the DOJ apparently missed, prompting Nadler to schedule a Wednesday vote on contempt proceedings against the attorney general. You might recall under the previous attorney general, he was sanctioned by Republican members of the House. It actually has no teeth to it. It's not particularly flattering, but it doesn't actually constitute any real action. Meanwhile, George Papadopoulos leaves after his sentence hearing in the district court in Washington, D.C. back in September of 2018, at which time it was believed that chicanery was the force behind the formal opening of the FBI's Trump-Russia investigation. Now, according to Andrew McCarthy, he argues that there was a false premise, namely the Trump campaign must have known that Russia possessed emails related to Hillary Clinton. After all, the then candidate Trump made a joke about it. From there, they're either through either intentional deception or incompetence, the foreign minister of Australia and the United States erected a fraudulent story tying the Trump campaign purported knowledge to the publication of hacked Democratic National Committee emails. That is what we A learn from the saga of George Papadopoulos as fleshed out by the Mueller report. Well, the investigative theory on which the FBI formally opened the foreign counterintelligence probe codenamed Crossfire Hurricane on the 31st of July in 2016 held that the Trump campaign knew about and was potentially complicit in Russian possession of hacked emails that would compromise Hillary Clinton, and that in order to help Donald Trump, the Kremlin planned to disseminate those emails anonymously through a third party at a time maximally damaging rather to Clinton's campaign. There are thus two components of this theory, the emails and Russia's intentions. Well, Papadopoulos knew nothing about the DNC emails and probably nothing about any emails. The one and only source of the email component of the story is George Papadopoulos. He, of course, is a convicted liar, convicted, in fact, of lying to the FBI during the very same interviews in which he related the details about the emails. Moreover, the Mueller report confirms that he is simply unreliable. To inflate his importance, he overhyped his credentials, repeatedly misled his Trump campaign superiors, regarding his discussions with people he believed had connections to the Russian regime, who they were what they were in a position of to promise. Other than Papadopoulos' own words, there is no evidence, none, that he was told about emails by Joseph Mifsud, a Maltese academic whom the FBI and the Mueller investigation deceptively portrayed as a Russian agent. He was not. As was previously detailed, because the investigation could not establish that this individual was a Russian agent, Mueller's charge against Papadopoulos is artfully framed to obscure that weakness. Carefully parsed, Mueller's allegation is that Papadopoulos had reason to believe that he was a Russian agent, not that Mr. Mifsud actually was. Well, it goes on from there, but it's an interesting column in National Review written by Andy McCarthy, and his headline simply suggests that the FBI's Trump-Russia investigation was formally opened on false pretenses, and that is something that the Attorney General says he wants to get to the bottom of, and that is what prompted this investigation. Meanwhile, former Vice President Biden mistakenly claimed that Margaret Thatcher, who died in 2013, is worried about Donald Trump. The Democratic presidential candidate, Joe Biden, reportedly had to correct himself over the weekend after telling donors that Margaret Thatcher is concerned about the United States under Trump. Thatcher, the former prime minister of Britain, died in 2013, nearly 2 years before Trump launched his first campaign for president, and she had dementia at the time. According to Bloomberg News, Biden eventually corrected himself, explaining to his donors he meant to say British Prime Minister Theresa May. Theresa May, Margaret Thatcher, instead of Thatcher, blaming the mix-up on a Freudian slip. Biden's confusing comments came Saturday during a closed-door fundraiser in Columbia, South Carolina. He listed Thatcher as one of 14 heads of states who he claimed had voiced concerns to him about Trump, the outlet reported. May has been a prime minister since 2016. Thatcher resigned as prime minister in 1990. During his fundraiser swing in South Carolina, the former vice president also took a page out of Trump's playbook on Saturday when he asked if he had a nickname for the president. Biden reportedly said he didn't want to get down in the mud with the president, but he did choose a moniker for the current White House occupant. Clown was one, but there was one worse that I wouldn't repeat because that's not language that I use. So this is going to be one of those campaigns. Meanwhile, Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido says that he overestimated military support for his effort to topple the country's rulers. We still need more soldiers to support it, to back the Constitution, he said, according to reports. He added he would consider an offer of military assistance if the United States made one. Meanwhile, heated protests continued in Venezuela at the embassy in Washington, D.C. Images posted to social media appear to show arrests of members of the activist group Code Pink, which last week tried to take control of the embassy in support of Maduro. And by the way, Russia is stirring the ghosts of Cuba's Cold War past as it looks into reestablishing its influence in the communist-run island nation, although this time analysts say Moscow has no intention of bankrolling Havana. I mean, they're already busy in Syria and in Venezuela. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. Up next, we're going to talk with Suzanne Gallagher, Executive Director of the Parents' Rights in Education. It's an organization that is working with parents to help them understand what's happening in schools and to advocate for their kids. They have a soapbox lecture series that's coming up. We'll tell you all the important details in just a few moments.
You're listening to the Georgine Rice Show podcast. is aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. I had occasion just recently as I was exiting Bible study fellowship to run into a woman who is very exercised about what's happening in public education. She and I had a brief conversation, and she told me about an event that's coming up tonight and tomorrow night, one in Scappoose, the other in Lake Oswego, that's sponsored by Parents' Rights in Education. I knew that I wanted to make sure KPDQ listeners were aware of these two events, but I also want to let you know more about Parents' Rights in Education, the work that they're doing, and how you can learn more. So I invited to join me Suzanne Gallagher, who's the Executive Director of Parents' Rights in Education. She joins us now to talk about the Soapbox Lecture Series, one occurring tonight and tomorrow night, as well as the work of Parents' Rights in Education. Suzanne Gallagher, I know this is a busy day for you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, absolutely, Georgine. Thank you. This is such an important issue.
Your guest that's coming.
It's more than one issue. It's many
absolutely.
Issues.
Absolutely. I'm going to arrange to talk with your guest about the book that she has recently written. But before we talk about tonight's event, let's talk a little bit about Parents' Rights in Education, what the organization does, what your focus is, so that listeners can become better acquainted.
Terrific. We have a website, and people are certainly encouraged to visit our website. You'll have to visit several times before you get the full picture. But our tagline, we have three taglines: valuing students, empowering parents, and enlightening communities. And essentially that is what we do. We expose what's happening. We try to share specific situations. We get calls, literally, Georgine, I had no idea when taking on this position about a year ago that we would be reaching out to the entire nation. We hear from people in Ohio. We hear from people in just recently Minnesota. They are establishing parents' rights and education chapters in their states.
It seems to me there are two kinds of parents with regard to public schools. There are parents who have no clue the extent to which their parental rights are being challenged. And then there are those who are fully aware but are frustrated because they're not quite sure what to do about it. And parents' rights in education really addresses and equips both parents.
Yes, actually, once you learn about the issues and you understand them, then you can recognize what's going on. You may hear from another parent or your child. You know, your children normally don't come home from school talking about, the survey they took that day. Either they didn't really understand it. You know, it's we just saw a survey that was passed out in Dallas School District to 14-year-old high school freshmen, and it asked the students, it showed a series of photographs of men and women, and it said on a scale from 1 to 5, which one is this particular photo? Is it more man or more woman?
So biology wasn't really relevant in that illustration.
No. I mean, it's just like, what is the picture? Does this person look like a man or a woman? And they're trying to make the case for gender identity, and that it doesn't really depend on, what your biological parts are. It depends on who you believe you are and how you express yourself, and opens the door for kids to start thinking, well, gee, maybe I'm not really, this biological person. Maybe I'm not really a boy or a girl. Maybe I'm something in between or something totally opposite. And if the parent isn't aware of these kinds of things that are happening in the schools, they're not going to be asking their kids, or they're not going to be asking the teachers. They're not going to be going to the school board meetings and finding out what the health curriculum actually is.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
And by the way, they're teaching gender identity now. They're proposing that in all the schools in Oregon starting in kindergarten. That is part of the health standards that the Oregon Department of Education has handed down to the various school boards.
Now, the organization's name is Parents' Rights in Education, and the assumption might be, based on our understanding of the relationship between the state and parents from years ago, that parents ultimately are the arbiter of decision-making for their children. What's in that individual child, my son, my daughter, their best interest, and the state takes a back seat to that and defers to the parent. Now, that was the old paradigm, but we're in the midst of, and perhaps at the tail end of, a paradigm shift where that is no longer the presumption.
You're exactly right. The parents are really kind of an irritation. Concerned parents are coming to the school, and they're participating in meetings. And yes, in many cases, they are listened to. We are not here to say that every single school, every single district is not listening to parents.
Mm-hmm.
We're also not saying that all teachers are, you know, a part of this, because there are many teachers who are extremely uncomfortable throwing a coming out party for a third grader who's decided to change from a boy to a girl. So that's why we need chapters in every school district, so those individuals can get together. It's, you're always stronger, you know, when you're in numbers. It's no fun to be alone, and the schools do take advantage of that. So we coach parents in how, you know, what's the best approach. And by the way, again, what is your right? Your right is to see the curriculum. You have the right to see it. You have the right to opt your child out of offensive, controversial curriculum that does not line up with your value system.
Now, one of the things that you're working on is to kind of reverse the way things are done now, where you opt out of something, rather that parents would have the choice to opt in so that they're not blindsided by things that their children are being exposed to or taught that run counter to their core values.
That's correct. And it is a little bit confusing when people first hear about it. They get kind of mixed up, opt out, opt in, what are we doing here? Well, the default now is opt out. In other words, every child is presumed to be opted in to the teaching, to all of the teaching. And it's up to the parents to dig around, to find out what's being taught, and to send a form to the school, to take that form into the school, make a copy, put it in their file, make sure that the school district stamps it and receives it into the child's file, and then monitor whether or not that child is actually being opted out of the classes and the controversial discussions that parents want them to be opted out of. So the problem with opt-out is that oftentimes they forget. The school forgets, or the teacher, you know, forgets. Somebody forgets. And the parent finds out later when their child comes home and says, well, yeah, we were putting condoms on, you know, fake body parts today in class. And Planned Parenthood was here teaching it. And the parent is thinking, oh, lovely. Now it's too late. My child's already seen that. It's taught without any kind of value system whatsoever. And actually, this has happened recently at Taggart High, where students who, you know, attend a great evangelical church, you know, strong moral values in her family, et cetera, begin to doubt her own value system because of the message that is being given in the class. Were those children, were their parents sent home any kind of alert that this was going to be taught? I don't think so. And so those parents had no opportunity to opt out. The parents are, you know, again, it requires a lot of work on the part of the school. With opt-in, everyone is opted out. That's the default. And if you choose to have that teaching, your responsibility is to sign a paper just like you would for a field trip. And the reason you do that for a field trip is because of a liability. And I contend that there is liability here in some of this teaching. So you sign that form saying it's all right for my child to be taught this particular curriculum. And then, you know, it's win-win, Georgine,
mm-hmm.
because the school district then, they know that every single child that is being taught this, their parents have said, yes, I want it. And the rest of the class, they're not automatically opted in.
Yeah.
They are automatically opted out.
Well, we know there are those that would prefer that parents just not be a part of the equation. And again, I appreciate you're making the point that this doesn't reflect every school district. It doesn't reflect every teacher. But parents, once they're made aware of what's happening in their community, then they can respond to what they're concerned about. And that's part of what Parents' Rights in Education is doing. Now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Soapbox lecture that's coming up tonight in Scappoose at Scappoose Foursquare Church, and tomorrow night in Lake Oswego at Crown Plaza, featuring Mary Rice Hassan. We'll tell you more about that in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show.
You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
We're back. You're listening to The Georgene Rice Show, and I'm continuing my conversation with the Executive Director of Parents' Rights in Education, Suzanne Gallagher. They value students, they empower parents, they enlighten communities. That's the work of Parents' Rights in Education. They also feature a soapbox lecture series, and today and tomorrow is an opportunity to hear from one of the most renowned writers on the subject of the culture in public schools, Mary Rice Hassan. You write on your flyer that almost overnight, America's public schools have become morally toxic, especially for families of faith who value traditional morality and common sense. Millions of parents with children in public schools are asking, should we stay or should we go? And so the subject of tonight's lecture, as well as tomorrow night, is America's cultural crisis, public schools. Should we stay or should we go? And the point is, they're going to unpack the issues and choices facing parents. If you think you know what's going on in public schools across the country, but you're not sure you're up to speed, this is a great opportunity to learn what's actually happening today, not just 5 years ago or 10 years ago, but today. And again, there are two opportunities to listen in. Now, for folks who are interested in the Soapbox Lecture Series, they need to go to your website?
They don't have to necessarily. We are taking, people who come to the door. There's a $10 fee for the event, and you can just pay at the door. So they can come to Lake Oswego tomorrow night or to the Scappoose location at Scappoose Foursquare Church.
And both events begin at 6:30 p.m. This is a great opportunity to hear from someone who is at the cutting edge of what's happening across the country. Tell us a little bit about Mary Rice Hassan.
Mary Rice Hassan is not someone that I had ever heard of before, but when I learned of her book and downloaded it. You can download it if you have an Amazon account. You can get the Audible version, and I believe it's complimentary. Anyway, so I started listening to it, Georgene, thinking, well, I wonder, if this is going to be slanted that, or, just leaving public schools. She does make the case for that, but we all know that it's not practical. Everyone can't leave. And so if you stay, you need to be apprised, and you need to understand what it is that you can do to protect your child. And that's always easier. Misery loves company when you get together with others. So that's our role. But, some people will choose to homeschool or send their child to a private school. Mary's presentation tonight and her book is the best summary, literally, of this entire overview of what is happening in our public schools today. She deals with, every aspect. She names the players, Planned Parenthood, all of the various organizations that have so much influence on the curriculum in our schools today. And it's not just human sexuality education or comprehensive sexuality education that is controversial, but the entire promotion of the ideology of gender identity, that is probably the number one frightening issue it's taking over all the schools. And it's not just about bathrooms. It's about students not being happy with who they are, with the bodies that God provided for them.
Yeah. And there's so many implications, like free speech and the free exercise of religion, that are linked to that controversy. So it really is far more important, you're right, than just, although that's significant enough, than just bathrooms and locker rooms and who competes in a high school track meet. There are lots of very serious implications. Now, through the Soapbox series of lectures, what do you hope to provide parents who are concerned about and want to be well-informed and constructive in their approach to educators in their communities? What do you hope to accomplish?
Well, we just hope to inform them, to energize them, to get them, you know, talking to one another, to putting them with other parents that are in their same school district, to, you know, literally waking up the people. And we also hope that they will get more involved in their local school government, which is the school board. And right now are school board elections.
Yes.
And they need to know, you know, they need to know the background. They need to take time. It's really the only main election that's taking place right now. And so they need to look into that. I was just sent an article about a person running in like Oswego. And NARAL is one of his main sponsors. So, you know, we need to be aware. I mean, where do these people sit on these issues? Because they will be promoting all kinds of things. In the school-based health clinics, I would direct your listeners to that page. It talks about the laws in Oregon pertaining to children, minors' rights, they're called, that they have access to health care through the school-based health clinics without their parents' knowledge or consent. They can be referred to Planned Parenthood not only for an abortion, but for hormone treatments that are given to young people to stop them from going through puberty so that they, to prepare them for gender transitioning. And I never thought I would be explaining this kind of medical procedure, but it is legal in the state of Oregon for students as young as 14 and 15 years old. We have the form on our website that the Oregon Health Authority, which is in tandem working with the Oregon Department of Education, that students fill out to be sterilized.
Mm. And this is, again, without parents' knowledge or consent.
Absolutely.
Well, I am grateful Absolutely. For the work of Parents' Rights and Education, the Soapbox Lecture Series that provides opportunity to learn more, to go deeper, and to connect parents who are concerned with one another, because it can be very intimidating to come before a board of professionals who can be very dismissive about parents raising concerns about their sons and their daughters. So this is a tremendous opportunity for people who do want to have a clear understanding of what the challenges are to learn more. Now, again, the Soapbox Lecture Series tonight is at SCAPHU's Foursquare Church. It begins at 6:30 p.m. The cost is $10. Their space is limited, so, you know, you can show up with your $10. There are complimentary light snacks and beverages, so, you know, you can make yourself comfortable and learn what's in the best interest of your community and your children. And then tomorrow night in Lake Oswego at Crown Plaza at 6:30 p.m., you'll have an opportunity once again to hear Mary Rice Hassan speak on these subjects. I would also encourage you to go to the website Parents Rights in ED. It's just abbreviated parentsrightsined.com for information about what Parents Rights in Education is doing and how you might learn more and become connected with others in your respective community. Well, Suzanne, I so appreciate the work that you're doing and the time you've taken to talk with us today. And I'd love to keep in touch and make sure our listeners are aware of what you all are doing and some of the issues that that come to your attention.
Thank you so much, Georgine. And we'll look forward to seeing some of your listeners at our events.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, Suzanne. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, Suzanne Gallagher is Executive Director of Parents' Rights in Education, and the Soapbox Lecture Series tonight is in SCAPHU's at SCAPHU's Foursquare Church, beginning at 6:30 p.m. The cost is $10. And then tomorrow night, May 7th, 6:30 p.m. in Lake Oswego at Crown Plaza. And Mary Rice Hassan, who's the author of Get Out Now, is the speaker. And I appreciated that Suzanne made the point that not every parent has the ability to withdraw their children from public school. So how do you cope with what's there? How do you become informed, stay informed, and involved in what's being taught to your children? So if you're a parent, a grandparent, someone who's concerned about the education system in the state of Oregon and across the country for that matter, this is a great opportunity for you to learn more. All right, coming up, we're going to take a break for news and traffic at the top of the hour. You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Well, welcome back. You're listening to the second hour of the Georgine Rice Show. Glad to have you with us. Coming up in this hour, we're going to talk with Sean McDowell. He is the co-author of So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. And what a world and what a challenge they will face over the coming decades. So that's coming up at the bottom of this hour. Actually, in our next segment. It's coming up in our next segment. Let's get that straight. Well, educators from across the metro area are gathering in order to take a day off. May 8th is a teacher walkout, and there are some districts that are actually closing. Teachers and education advocates across the state are flocking to several rallies on Wednesday. It's a bid to pressure the Oregon legislature into passing a $2 billion corporate tax package to buoy K through 12 funding and push for more money for universities and community colleges. The protest, portrayed as a walkout by educator unions in the weeks leading up to the event, have forced several school districts across the metro area to actually shutter for the day. So there may not be school on Wednesday in your school district at the school your kids attend. Most, including Portland Public Schools, will add another day at the end of the academic calendar to comply with state classroom hour regulations because the teachers will not be in their classrooms. Now, the rallies are the latest in a series of protests by teachers and education advocates. They're pushing for what they say is much-needed stability in the state's K through 12 funding mechanisms. A multi-billion dollar tax plan for schools advanced after last-minute deals with business groups over the last several days. And the plan is to raise billions of dollars in new business taxes that would fund improvements to public schools in Oregon and early childhood education programs as well. Now, whether or not you would define them as improvements, whether or not I would, is not yet clear at this point. But it cleared a big hurdle on Monday night when it passed out of committee on a party-line vote. Well, the $2 billion corporate tax package passed through the House, on a party-line vote last week and may head to the Senate floor as early as tomorrow. Lawmakers are also considering another $100 million boost to education funding in the state budget. Still, there are some educators who showed up for an April 10th rally in Portland. They said that they wanted the state to address what they say is lackluster investment in Oregon community colleges and public universities. In Eugene, the University of Oregon's governing body voted unanimously to raise tuition for non-resident undergraduates by 3% earlier in March. And Portland State University is considering tuition hikes of 14%. And that's across the board, it appears. Well, organizers for the rallies on Wednesday have identified at least six events across the state in Portland, in Salem, Medford, Eugene, Bend, and Klamath Falls. In Portland, demonstrators are going to begin rallying at Tom McCall Waterfront Park at 11 a.m. That's followed by a march at noon. Now, among those metro area districts that are closed for the day, and again, we're talking about Wednesday, May the 8th, Washington County, Beaverton School District, Hillsboro School District, Tigard-Tualatin School District, Clackamas County, Lake Oswego School District, North Clackamas School District, West Lynn-Wilsonville School District, Multnomah County, David Douglas School District, Gresham School District, Park Rose School District, Portland Public Schools, and Reynolds School District as well. That not only means that school will not be called to order on Wednesday, but that means they're going to add another day at the end of the school year to make up for the day that the teachers are taking for their demonstration on Wednesday. So make note of that. Also, members of the Oregon House are going to vote today at some point, if they haven't already, on a bill that would end non-medical vaccine exemptions for Oregon school students. House Bill 3063 generated thousands of emails to lawmakers, multiple protests in front of the Capitol, emotional pleas for and against its passage during public hearings. Well, the measure would remove the ability for parents to claim a religious or philosophical exemption for getting their kids vaccinated. A doctor-approved medical exemption would still be possible, but only under medical conditions. Well, the vaccines are a requirement for students to enroll in public or private schools in Oregon. Homeschool students are not subject to the law. Supporters of the measure cite a recent increase in measles cases in the U.S., including an outbreak this year in Southwest Washington. Opponents say it largely takes the decision to vaccinate out of the hands of parents. Well, the vote in the Oregon House is expected to be close. If approved, the bill would head to the Senate. So that's expected sometime today if it hasn't already taken place. And there's a report from the Oregon Employment Department showing that from 2013 to 2017, More people had moved to Oregon than have left, and about 40,000 Californians annually. Excuse me. Excuse me. Although Oregon has saw migration flow between every state in the nation, it was mostly between nearby Washington, or rather western states. Oregon also saw an influx of people from specific career industries. Oregon gains the most residents from California. On average, 39,320 Californians move to Oregon annually. But an average of 19,523 Oregonians also make the move south, leaving Oregon with a net gain of about 19,000 new residents from California every year. The state with the second highest net in migration number, the difference between people moving from a state and Oregonians leaving for that same state, is Hawaii. Oregon saw a net gain of about 2,000 people from Hawaii per year in that five-year period. Now, as wet and cold as it can be here, one wonders why you would ever move from there to here. But Oregon, well, it just really can't be beat. Times Square was the scene on Saturday of a pro-life demonstration. Abby Johnson, who's the subject of the pro-life film Unplanned, she amplified her unborn baby's heartbeat by bypassers to hear as she underwent a 4D ultrasound in New York City's Times Square. "This is a baby. This right here is a baby," she said while patting her stomach. She appeared on stage on Saturday after the ultrasound and declared that life is winning. "We will see a day when abortion in this country is unthinkable," she went on to say. Well, she was speaking at Focus on the Family's Alive from New York. It was an event set up as a reaction to the state's controversial abortion legislation signed earlier this year. Well, the host of the live stream indicated that the ultrasound broadcast on a large screen on the Alive from New York stage showed the baby yawning. Vice President Pence highlighted the ultrasound on Saturday with a tweet. "As Democrat governors in New York and Virginia advocate for late-term abortion and even infanticide, and Democrats in Congress refuse to allow a vote on the Born Alive bill, today in Times Square, an ultrasound will be shown for all to see, demonstrating the miracle of life," end quote. Well, Johnson's film Unplanned caused a media firestorm as it depicted the true story of her transition from director at a Planned Parenthood in Texas and eventually leaving to found one of the most prominent pro-life organizations in the country. Johnson's group helps clinic workers like she was leave for other jobs. Well, I want to take a moment and encourage you once again to join the bandwagon, if I can put it so crudely, of those of us who are enjoying Better Together. It's the program that has been produced by TBN. It's unlike anything they've done to date. It is a program by women and for women. I'm talking, of course, about Better Together. This week, they're focusing on intimacy with God. And isn't that something all of us strive to enjoy more perfectly? And they're focusing today, rather, their focus was, is God good? Can we trust in his goodness? In a broken and hurting world, how can we believe that God is truly good? And they're going to continue that theme through the remainder of this week. Tomorrow, in fact, they're going to be focusing their content on how to remove barriers that hinder our relationship with God. And they talk about victory. How do you go from one to the other? So that's what's coming up on to tomorrow's program. Now, of course, you can hear Better Together weekdays at 10:30 a.m. here in the Portland metro area. You can also download the TBN app or go to visitbettertogether.tv and register to watch anytime. It's a great program that encourages us to live in community as women, because doing life alone, it's just not enough. We are better together. And that's the program we want to encourage you to check out. Again, 10:30 a.m. Pacific time weekdays. You can download the TBN app or you can visit bettertogether.tv and register to watch anytime. Hey, you're listening to The Georgine Rice Show. Up next, we're going to talk with Sean McDowell. He's the co-author of a very important book, So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World.
You're listening to The Georgine Rice Show podcast. It's aired on 93.9 KPDQ.
Hey, we're back with the final segment of The Georgine Rice Show. Well, as we mentioned, Warren Wiersbe, the preacher's favorite Bible commentator, a teacher, a pastor, preacher, he died on Thursday at age 89, leaving an impressive legacy of teaching and preaching, mentoring countless pastors, and through his lessons, broadcasted sermons, over 150 books. He resourced the church to better read and explain the Bible. Well, in a tribute, his grandson, Dan Jacobson, recalled how pastors often told him, "There's not a passage in the Bible I haven't first looked up what Wiersbe has said on the topic." Well, Mr. Wiersbe, Pastor Wiersbe, if you will, described himself as a bridge builder spanning the gap from the world of the Bible to the world of today so that we could get to the other side of glory in Jesus, according to his grandson. Of all his many writings, his Be Commentary series is the most well-known and well-loved, including books like Be Loyal, the Book of Matthew, Be Diligent, the Book of Mark, Be Compassionate, the first 13 chapters of Luke, Be Courageous, 14 through 24 in Luke, Be Alive for the first 12 chapters in the book of John, and Be Transformed, 13 through 21. He also saw his love of expounding the scripture as a gift that God had given him for the sake of others. "Writing to me is a ministry," he said. "I'm not an athlete. I'm not a mechanic. I can't do so many of the things that successful men can do, but I can read and study and think and teach. This is a beautiful, wonderful gift from God. And I'm doing is... all I'm doing is using what he's given to me to teach people and to give glory to the Lord Jesus Christ." Well, his wisdom and teaching has left an indelible mark on countless pastors and Christian leaders. Jerry Vines, Baptist minister and two-time past president of the Southern Baptist Convention, remarked on Twitter that "so many things I did were birthed by Warren Wiersbe." Remembering his great mentor and friend, he said, "Wiersbe is the man who taught me how to expound the Word of God." Daniel Darling, who's vice president for communications at the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, also spoke of Wiersbe's influence, saying, "He had a formative influence on me as a writer and pastor, a long, full life of service to the church." Giving thanks for the life of one of the great preachers of our century, Warren Wiersbe tweeted Barry McCarty, who's a professor of preaching and rhetoric at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, "So many close friends who have influenced me deeply were mentored by Wiersbe. We owe him much." Well, in addition to a prolific writing career, Warren Wiersbe, who came to faith after hearing Billy Graham preach at an early Youth for Christ rally, was also involved in parachurch and pastoral ministry for much of his life. He served as director of Youth for Christ's literature division and editor of Campus Life magazine. In addition to his work with groups like the Slavic Gospel Association, Child Evangelism Fellowship, National Religious Broadcasters, Christian Booksellers Association, and Back to the Bible, he received ordination from Northern Baptist Theological Seminary in Lombard, Illinois, and back in 51, that's 1951, and held pastorships at Central Baptist Church in East Chicago, Indiana, Calvary Baptist Church in Covington, Kentucky, where his Sunday sermons were broadcast over the radio as the Calvary Hour, and the historic Moody Memorial Church in Chicago, where his sermons were broadcast on Moody Radio as part of Moody's Songs of the Night national radio program. And while at Moody Memorial, Wiersbe was a regular contributor for Moody Monthly, writing the Insight for the Pastor. It was a column giving practical ministry advice as well as brief biographies of famous individuals from church history. He also taught classes at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School during his time in Chicago and developed curriculum for the doctorate in ministry preaching course titled Imagination and the Quest for Biblical Preaching. Another important aspect of his time in Chicago was mentoring young pastors, among them up-and-coming preachers like Erwin Lutzer, who would succeed Wiersbe as the senior pastor at Moody Memorial after Wiersbe left in 1980. In a tribute to his mentor, Lutzer recalls that Wiersbe was always gracious with his time and cared deeply for the ministries of pastors he was mentoring and the city where God had placed him. "He always had time for us. He always made us feel as if we were the important ones in the room. It was never about him, but always about us. How I still remember him closing his books on his desk when we entered, sitting back, welcoming us, eager to discuss how our ministries were doing. We talked about the challenges of the city, the challenges of shepherding people, and the pressures of time for sermon preparation. Then we would find some hidden room in the church and intercede for the needs of the city and the great need for a revival, such as was experienced during the ministry of D.L. Moody." In 1980, Wiersbe and his wife, Betty, and their family moved to Lincoln, Nebraska, where Wiersbe took a teaching post at Back to the Bible Radio Ministries, and from 1984 to 1990, he served as general director of Back to the Bible. During this time, Wiersbe also wrote regularly for Christianity Today and its sister publication, Leadership Journal. Wiersbe amassed a prodigious library during his lifetime, so much so that when they were house hunting in Lincoln in 1980, ahead of the move back to the Bible, his wife Betty told the realtor, "We're looking for a library with a house attached. Warren Wiersbe chose to leave his collection of around 14,000 books to Cedarville University. As a part of the Warren and Betty Wiersbe Library and Reading Room, he became a writer-in-residence at Cornerstone University in Grand Rapids, Michigan in 1995, where he also was appointed Distinguished Professor of Preaching at Grand Rapids Theological Seminary. Warren Wiersbe has gone home. Well done, I'm certain, will be the words he hears from the Father. Well, tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk with Jen Pollock Michael, author of Surprised by Paradox, The Promise of And in an Either-Or World. We'll explain all of that tomorrow. On Wednesday, my guest host will be Mike Lee, and we're looking forward to giving him the microphone. On Thursday, we'll hear from Pastor Rich Jones from Calvary Chapel, Hillsboro. I'll be back in the saddle on Friday, as I'll be celebrating my 37th wedding anniversary on Wednesday and Thursday. And yes, I am proud of 37 years of marriage. These days, it's somewhat countercultural. So I am grateful to the Lord. I'm not bragging because I'm such a tremendous wife that I made it happen. I'm grateful to the Lord that he has given us the capacity to love one another beyond the first few days of marriage. You know, after the honeymoon, you have to depend on Jesus to help you get through the weeks and months and years that follow. And I was so grateful that God provided for me a wonderful husband who loves the Lord more than anything else. And that has helped us to stay together for so many years. In fact, every night this week, I've asked him, do you think we're going to make it? And he says, what are you talking about? Do you think we're going to make it till Wednesday? He kind of shrugs his shoulders, rolls his eyes and say, yeah, I think we're probably going to make it. But it's only Monday, so we still have Tuesday. We have to get through Tuesday to see if we make it to 37 years, which will be on Wednesday. So we're looking forward to that. We were anticipating a conversation earlier today with Sean McDowell. I'm disappointed something happened. We weren't able to reach him, but we will try to reschedule that conversation on the book that he co-authored, So the Next Generation Will Know, Preparing Young Christians for a Challenging World. It's published by David C. Cook, and I would highly recommend it if you do have a genuine concern for young people and how to connect with them in a real constructive and meaningful ways. Also, in the 4 o'clock hour, had the opportunity to talk with Suzanne Gallagher, who is executive director of the Parents' Rights in Education organization. They have a soapbox lecture series guest tonight and tomorrow night in Scappoose at Scappoose Foursquare Church tonight, and then tomorrow in Lake Oswego at Crown Plaza. Both events start at 6:30, and the author, the speaker for this series is Mary Rice Hassan, author of Get Out Now, an important book on what's going on in public schools all across the country. So I hope you will check that out. The cost is $10. You can go to their website for more information. Want to thank Chris Williams and James Blend for producing, engineering today's program. And thank you for making the Georgine Rice Show part of your day. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening to the Georgine Rice Show podcast. If you'd like to download a podcast of the show or would like more information on today's guests, please visit the show at kpdq.com or on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter at GRice Show and like us on Facebook. And join us live every weekday at 4 for more critical thinking for critical times on 93.9 KPDQ.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.